This is Jeff Hoover, and you're listening to The Improv Nerd.
Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Jimmy Crane's an improv nerd. Jimmy Crane's a nerd.
Hey everybody, Jimmy Crane, and you're listening to another episode of Improv Nerd, sponsored by the good people at Hotel Lincoln. The next time you find yourself here in the city of Chicago, that toddling town, the windy city, and you're looking for a cool boutique hotel that's close to everything. It's right across the street from the beautiful Lincoln Park Zoo, right around the corner from the Second City, and it's minutes to Chicago's Loop. Check out the official hotel of Improv Nerd, Hotel Lincoln. And a quick shout out to my award-winning improv classes here in Chicago, The Art of Slow Comedy, where we teach you, before you can be funny, you need to be real. And if you're real, you're going to be even funnier. I limit my classes to no more than 12 people, so you get plenty of reps in, plenty of stage time, and the personal attention you deserve. I have a Fundamentals of Improv starting June 28th at Stage 773. I also have July 6th, a one-day intensive Art of Slow Comedy. So if you're in Chicago in July and you want to study with me, Jimmy Crane, the host of Improv Nerd, just go to my website, jimmycrane.com. That's www.jimmycrane.com. You are really going to like today's show. You know, every once in a while we like to change things up. We like to put a wild card right in the deck. Well, we're doing it for you today. Our guest today is from the WGN Morning News here in Chicago, the number one morning news, Jeff Hoover. He is an on-air producer, and if you haven't seen the WGN Morning News, it is a very, very funny news program. They do sketches like you'd see on Saturday Night Live or Conan O'Brien, and the anchors are very loose and very improvisational, and it's just a very, very funny way of presenting the news. And I love to do these shows every once in a while, like I did with the Rick Bayless show, who's a celebrity chef, with someone who has some improv background. And Jeff Hoover studied at Second City. He also was a member of the WNEP Theater, which they did some wonderful shows, I believe, like in the early to late 90s here in Chicago. And I like these kind of shows where it's like, okay, He has improv experience, but he didn't go the conventional route. He's not writing for Colbert. He's not on a Herald team at UCB or IO Chicago. He's not on main stage at Second City. I just think it's cool that more and more people are taking their improv training and doing it in different jobs. If you've gone to my personal Facebook page, you've noticed that I haven't posted anything really in the last 9 days. And I have to tell you, I'm going through some withdrawals. I'm shaking. It's hard for me to sleep at night and I break out in sweats. And it really came because I was really getting into it. I was finding my voice, some dark stuff, some personal stuff, like having sex with my wife, some thoughts in my head, like I hate myself, those kind of things that I would post on Facebook. And I was really getting into it. I mean, I was like really, I was loving it actually, maybe a little obsessive. And I went into my therapist and I told him about this recently. And he said, well, how much are you getting paid for this? And I said, nothing. And he suggested that I, instead of posting on Facebook, I write them down, what I would post on Facebook, in a notebook and collect them to do a one-person show. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, and it's been 9 days, I haven't done that, and I really feel stuck. And there's like feelings coming up, like sadness, and it's really affected my confidence. I don't feel funny. I feel kind of withdrawn from life. So I don't know what's going to come of it. Hopefully maybe a one-person show. I'm kind of excited about doing a one-person show, and I would do it around this Facebook. But I don't know where it's going to lead to. Anyways, I know where this is going to lead to, and this is going to lead us to the Jeff Hoover episode. And a quick note, as you listen to it, towards the end of it, there's someone in the audience, his name is Dean Richards, and we have a kind of a back and forth conversation with him. And Dean Richards is on the WGN Morning News. He is the entertainment reporter. So I just wanted to let you know that so you have some context for that. Here you go. I know you're going to enjoy this. The Jeff Hoover episode.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
Now, I'll never make it to Leno, so this is a close. Thank you for having me. Thanks for everyone coming out. This is great. I recognize a lot of you.
So you told me that you tried to get, if you could have gotten out of this, you would have gotten out of this.
Just a few hours ago, I got home from working out, and Tracy heard me in the other room.
Tracy, your wife. Wife,
I let out a, why am I doing this? And she goes, to grow. And I'm like, wow.
So are how are you feeling now? Because
I'm really nervous because I don't do this kind of thing.
And what is it, the interview, the improv?
It's everything. I hide behind characters and voice. Even now I feel like I'm really not myself. You know, I'm putting out a little bit of an extra effort in my voice while you're talking to me. So this is very, it's challenging. I mean, you would think, I went through Second City. Mm-hmm. I work for Jonathan Brandmeier. And I've been producing for WGN Morning News for 11 years. So you'd think by now I'd have, you know, pretty comfortable existence, but it's really tough.
And the thing that I found interesting about you is you had a lisp, right? And you were a heavy kid.
I still have it today. I mean,
really? How did you?
When I was in, anybody else in grade school, they pull you out of the room. There was a kid that couldn't say R's. There was a girl that couldn't do CH sounds. And I was the kid that couldn't say S. So they pull you out of like English class in a little room, and they'd make you write your problem letter. So I'd be going, and there'd be a kid, girl going, and there was a kid with the web wabbit went on web bomb, the web wabbit went on web bomb. So I mean, it was like a nightmare. So to this day, if I'm not paying attention to myself, I'll find myself getting a little lispy.
Has it ever slipped when you were doing stuff on the WGN Morning News?
No, but I have cassette tapes when I used to work at WSJM, WIRX in Southwest Michigan. I used to be on the air on the weekend. They let me host a show, which is basically playing Dick Bartley's Solid Gold Oldies. And I'd read these liner notes when the bookmobile was going to be in your town. And it's me going, this is Jeff Hoover on the Spirit of the Southwest, WSJM. Seriously. So, yeah, but I'm good. I just keep it in mind that it does pop up occasionally, and I suppress the little fat kid with a lisp.
And then in theater, in high school, you did a lot of theater, right?
Yeah, I did a lot of all-school plays, one-act plays, musicals. I did The King and I. I didn't shave my head, but I was tempted to shave my head. But I was kind of method. But yeah, that
method for St. Joe, Michigan.
Yeah, for St. Joe, Michigan.
And then you were also voted most likely to succeed, right?
Yeah, which is a horrible thing.
What way? I've always wanted to be popular.
No one wants to be.
Why?
As much as you think you want to be, because I was a complete failure. And I lived in my parents' basement after graduating from college. And I'm jumping all over the place. And I worked at a video store. And my old history teacher, Mr. Ramirez, I'm outing you. Right here. He used to go into
he
the.
Couldn't make
he used
it.
To go into the beaded room, you know. And I would like Ebony Humper's Street. So he would, and he didn't recognize me. But I'm like, oh my God, I'm renting porn to an old history teacher. And it was just the lowest of my, you know. I live in my parents' basement. I'm like, hey, Mom, Dad, Harlem Nights came out today. Do you want me to bring it home? Yeah, Eddie Murphy. Yeah, Eddie Murphy movie. And there would be, the clientele was mostly lower income families. And we'd write on the wall the new releases. And it was My Left Foot. And they'd go, man, that must be a motherfucking karate movie. My Left Foot. Shit, man, that's going to be good. And I wouldn't tell them because I wanted to rent.
Right.
So they'd get, what the fuck was that? Ain't no karate movie, motherfucker. So, where are we going?
It's really a dark period in your life, right? And you feel dark. Like you're a failure at this point, right?
Yeah, because you run into people that knew that you're most likely to succeed. Easy for me to say. And they would say, what the hell are you doing? I thought you'd be on television by now. I thought you'd be on the stage or something. I thought maybe you'd be in the movies, huh? What are you doing now?
I'm living in my parents' renting porn to old teachers. But I am dating a hot Spanish girl.
I was at the time.
And so it's really a dark time for you, and you make a phone call to a friend who's living here in Chicago.
Yeah, I wasn't suicidal, but my dad had a gun collection down in the basement. And there are a couple times where you kind of glance and you go, oh, yeah. There's an option. I never had one in my mouth or anything like that. Not a gun or anything. No, I never had one of those. But, hello?
It's working.
Hello? If you're listening in Korea, email me. I'll come get you. That was very Robin Williams.
Yeah,
it's no
very,
sense.
Very.
Whoa!
Right.
Whoa! Oh! Oh! My monkey!
So you make this phone call to a friend of yours that lives in Chicago.
Yeah,
and you don't know what you're
passed away. Tom Neubauer, great guy, seriously, kind of saved my life.
In what way?
Because I was desperate. My mom was putting pressure on me, and rightfully so. She knew I was torturing myself. Living, I had more potential than what I was doing, and I was working at a radio station. I wasn't making any money. I was helping all the other sales guys by doing voices and coming up with ad campaigns, but they didn't throw me any money. They were just like, oh, thanks a lot, Hoof. And one of the advertisers and all the sales guys went to this discount video store, and they never bought advertising. And I went in there, and they bought this big campaign, and all the sales guys, what the hell? You sold a discount video? How the hell did you do that? And I'm like, I don't know. I just kind of went in there and talked to them. And... But I still wasn't making a lot of money, and they knew I was miserable, and they said, hey, how would you like to manage the store? And I was like, well, I don't want more money. I guess I'll do it. But then it was like, Teresa, you can't have Saturday off. That's our busiest night. So it was just like, oh, my God, kill me now. So anyway, I called Tom, who I went to college with, Western Michigan University. I knew he lived in Chicago. He lived right on Halstead and Armitage. It was October, the Bulls, their first year in the playoffs, 1991. I called him. I'm like, Tom, I need some help. Can you help me out? What's going on there? He's like, hey, remember Bundy? Bundy's in the guy. I've got an empty room. Bundy's got the other one. Come to Chicago. You're like, come on. You want to do Second City? You should do Second City. It's like, you know, a mile or two away, dude. So I'm like, yeah, boom, light goes off.
And what did you know about Second City at that point?
I just knew that everybody that you ever loved in comedy came from there. And I thought, I did some theater, I did some musical theater. So I went there pretty cocky. Yeah, I watched Jonathan Winters as a kid. You know, I can do some improv, I can do this. And I auditioned for their training center. We had to audition for the training center. And I thought, well, come on. You know, and they gave me a scene. It's a woman, I was up there with a woman, and it was me as a washer machine repairman. So in my best Jonathan Winters kind of really full on, you know, well, let's take a look at it. What's the problem with it, huh? Yeah, and I was so involved in myself and looking at this washing machine that I totally ignored her. Like, I didn't know that at the time, but when I reflected later when I got the call that I didn't make their training, well, I was blown away. I was like, how could I have not gotten it? I would so nail that Jonathan Winters kind of character. But that's the thing. I now looking back, you become so focused on yourself and not your partner in the scene that I didn't even realize she was in the scene. I mean, I was so like involved in whatever I was doing.
So you didn't get in, and so what were you feeling like then? I mean, here you had just moved from Michigan.
It was horrible. I mean, but I didn't give up. I thought, well, okay, I'll give it a. You had to wait like till the next training classes started, so it was like 3 months. And at the time, I was working a bunch of temp jobs and stuff like that. So I tried it again, and I got in and met some great people, Don Hall, Joe James.
And then you guys all started WNAP then.
Yeah, right out of Second City, we did what I think probably a lot of you and you in Korea probably didn't do, but if you'd like to do it. Do you know the number at Second City?
I don't know.
They start... you start a show. You're like, hey, we did it, guys. We made our level 6. Let's start our own group. So we started our own group. And most times those things, after about a year, everybody's pissed off at each other or sleeping with each other. And you're like... But we kept it going. Sleeping together. And
are you endorsing sleeping together?
I would fully endorse sleeping together.
Okay.
Yes.
What's? How does that help? No.
No.
Okay.
It didn't help.
Okay. Did you sleep with somebody in a group?
What is this?
I don't know.
No. I didn't sleep. Well, yeah, I did.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't. Do you want me to name names?
No, you don't have to name names. I mean, if you want to,
no, I don't.
Your chance.
No.
Okay.
It's okay.
Does that get complicated when you do it? Because
you don't encourage that, because it can really destroy the makeup. Because all you have to do is have one fight, you know,
right?
And it just destroys everything. So, but anyway, that's not why we were very successful. We did a lot of really good. We did a whole show based on. It was all musical, all silent. And who's the Whipped Cream? I can remember the album cover. Herb Albert music. So we did all these improvised scenes using Herb Albert music and all silent. And it was awesome. I mean, we did a lot of experimental stuff. We did, one of my favorite movies was The Lost Weekend. And it had never been put together on stage. It was never a stage show. It was a 1940 movie, I think. Ray Milland won an Oscar. And we made that into a stage show. And it was at that point, about 10 years in, I was doing stuff for Brandmeier, I was calling in all the time.
So tell people who don't know Jonathan Brandmeier, Chicago people do, but tell us a little about Jonathan Brandmeier.
Jonathan Brandmeier is...
At that time.
Well, regardless of that time or today, he's one of the probably most entertaining radio personalities, most naturally funny comedians. And he's not even a comedian, he's not a stand-up, he's just a naturally funny Midwestern guy.
But he was a big morning personality at the time at The Loop, and it was like, I mean, he influenced a lot of us, our generation, him, Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer,
Kevin Matthews.
Right. I mean, it was, and to work, you know, for Brandmeier had to be a huge
thing. Yeah, I worked at a temporary job at a marketing company, and I found I was never getting any work done until after Johnny was done, which was like 10 o'clock.
Why? Because you
were in my cube, like... Right. Acting like I'm working, but meanwhile I had the radio on. And then one day he's like, "All right, Buzz, I got these tickets to see Jerry Lewis at the Drury Lane in Oak Brook. I don't think anybody wants to see Jerry Lewis anymore, but, you know, hey, we got these tickets. We're going to give them away. Call in with your best Jerry Lewis impression." Well, at the time, I didn't really do an impression of him. I did what everybody else did, which is, "Lady, hi!" That's all I had. But because I'd done some Second City, I knew I could, once if I got the opportunity, I could just kind of maybe try to roll with it, with the little I knew about him. Because at this time, in the early 90s, I didn't know as much about him as I do now. So I ran down the hall to HR, and I'm like, "Can I use your office? I want to try to win these Jerry Lewis tickets." She's like, "Whatever." And she's like, "Loser." And he had all these people calling in, like, oh, Johnny. Like, and I was like, "Okay, I'm feeling pretty good about my lady now." And he's going through them. They go, "All right, Hoover on the phone." I'm like, "Lady, hi. Oh, God, I hurt myself. Oh, God, I think I shook my colostomy bag loose, and it looks like a steakum. And, oh, God, the pain." And Buzz is like, "Jesus, I'd like to see Hoover." And so I won these tickets. And I dragged some friends that were like, "Really, don't make us go see him." And this was, he was vibrant, you know, doing the cane routine and jumping.
He was still doing the telethon.
He was doing all kinds of stuff. But after that moment, anytime Jerry came up in the news, Jerry Lewis parked in a handicapped parking spot. Yeah, he did one time. I don't know if you know that one.
No.
But he did. He actually had balls parking in a handicap. "I did a lot of goddamn work for those kids. I can park in the goddamn spot. What are they going to do about it? Come get me."
Earth to Korea. Are you with us? Godzilla!
No, sorry. By the way, Godzilla, can I just say something?
Yeah, please.
I love the movie. But when I'm watching him, like, going, do you think at some point they need to get with him? Like, pull him aside and say, "We think you're doing a really good job, but could you not knock over some buildings a little bit? I mean, could you maybe wrestle in the crumbled down buildings a little bit? Because you're really tearing this shit up a lot. And we know you're trying to help." This isn't stand-up here.
No, it's not.
Just an observation.
Not yet.
I'm watching
stand-up
this.
Yet. No, no.
I think at some point you need to talk to him and say, "You're doing a great job, but zillions of dollars you've caused in damage trying to kill that flying moth thing. Mm-hmm. Can you just maybe wrestle in the crumble and the rumble and stay away from the nice, pristine buildings that you haven't?"
Jeff, yeah. It would be a different movie.
All right. Okay. That's an honor, Jerry.
All right, so you're doing Jerry Lewis, and then you get...
I wasn't doing him in that way.
Right.
Who?
But it's interesting because you are a big Jerry Lewis fan, right?
Yeah, huge.
Now, how do you... Because you do such a great Jerry. There's got to... there's got to be some love for him and then some disdain for him mixed in.
I'm very protective over him. Thanks to Dean Richards, I've gotten a chance to meet him a couple of times.
Uh-huh.
And when you really get to meet him, you realize he's more together than what he comes across. Unfortunately, he's old and his marbles are flying out of his head now.
Right.
But when we met him, he was very gracious. And we come in with a camera and stuff like that. And he's like, you may want to move the blinds. You're going to have too much light over here. And I'm not trying to tell you what to do. But he was like directing. He was directing us around. And he's watching CNN. And he's asking about current events. And you're like, wow, he's really with it. And he's not I've read a recent review of how he is now when he does the shows.
Mm-hmm.
He can't do as much physical stuff as he used to do. And he does a Q&A, and he's very rude to his fans.
I can't imagine that.
You know, they'll ask for autographs, and he's like, no, next question. And it's like, can I give you a hug? No. And it's like, why are you doing this Q&A if you're not going to give them a little something? They've been such loyal fans of yours. I mean, I don't know why you would still perform and be outright rude.
Right. So you get this job at Brandmeier, and I love this story because the first day you... can you tell us, Johnny wants you to...
Well, here's the deal. Okay. He hired me and he said, let's do it 90 days. You know, you don't know much about how I work and vice versa.
He's hiring you just because of the phone calls.
All he knew was the Jerry Lewis. And one day I'm at work, I'm like, why am I doing this job? I was making like $35,000 a year, which was pretty good for... At the time, I was in my early 30s.
For an improviser, that's like, you know, like you're a millionaire. You know, I could buy beer.
You know, I could have probably went on and become a bigger and bigger.
Right,
more money,
right.
Blah, blah, blah. But I knew it wasn't fulfilling to me.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I called up his producer, Carol, and I said, hey, how does Johnny, do you think he'd ever think maybe hire me or something? She goes, well, he's very professional, very businesslike. Send a cover letter and resume. So about 3 months later, in the mail, I got a handwritten note, and it said, timing is everything, and there was probably a big penis drawn on it.
Was he like that?
Yeah, he drew penises on my desk.
Really?
He's got this whole big drawing penis thing.
What do you think? Do you ever try to,
I think he and, who's the pervert artist guy? Salvador Dali?
Yeah.
In their old age.
Right.
They just drew these big, giant penises of women with big, floppy boobs.
Right.
He got the big penises.
Right.
So anyway, what am I talking about? Penises?
I don't know. I don't know.
More respectful buildings?
I don't know. Okay, so you get the letter from Johnny with the giant penis on it, which means...
Yeah, timing is everything. So I'm at the bar.
Mm-hmm. You meet him at a bar?
My roommate called me at the bar because it's like my hangout. And he's like, hey, Brandmeier just called you. I'm like, no way. He's like, yeah, he wants you to call him back. So I run home. I call. He's like, hey, you want to do this? I'm like, yeah. He goes, let's do this. 90 days. We'll see what happens. Can you start Monday? Yeah, yeah. Well, great. Can you take $12,000? What? Yeah, I'll do it.
Was that like winning the lottery?
Well, it was like winning the lottery, but then like they smashed the prize car or something. I mean, because it was like I was taking a major hit in pay, but at the point I wasn't married, didn't have a car payment. This is my chance.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is that showbiz moment. This is that opportunity to give it a try, to see if I've got it. And the very first day, and I'm really showing my age, the first day I started, James Mason died.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really have a James Mason impression. But I grew up as that fat kid with a lisp watching Channel 9. And I watched Journey to the Center of the Earth. And I remember his character from Journey to the Center of the Earth. And I remember something about a goose. Or it was a duck or some kind of creature of some sort. And so I called in as James Mason. They did some seance thing. And at the first day, John just, way to go, dude. Way to go. Keep it up. So I knew, like, day one, I'm like, hey, I got a James Mason in there. Who knew? Jerry Lewis, James Mason.
Right.
And Hollywood, baby! Or Hollywood.
Right.
Oh, come on.
But, okay, so.
That was on camera.
But then you and Brandon team up. Can you explain
Brandon
that?
Sullivan.
Who was a writer.
Was a writer. Right?
And I improvised with him.
Yep, Brendan is a very talented guy. First day, I'd never met him before. He goes, Hoover, come here. And he had an office. And I go in there, and he's sitting at the desk. And he turns around this photo on his desk. And it's a picture of his wife and kids. just want to let you know, I got a family. I'm like, yeah? Well, I got a family. I got to feed this family, you know? And I'm like, oh, well, hey. I'm like, hey, you know, we're good. I don't know what's going on. Hey, you know? Because Johnny had told me, oh, this is going to be great. We have you and Brendan. You guys will be like, shh, 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 you know, have competition, both making each other better by, you know, outdoing one another, boom, 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 boom. And I'm like, yeah. But I meet Brendan and I see the reality. I mean, this guy's got a wife and kids and a family to provide for. I'm not going to play like a Russian roulette with him. We're going to be better off if we just play as a team. So we both kind of, from that day, say, hey, we can be just as great as Johnny wants us to be by working together. So let's just do that. Let's not draw blood. Let's not have a duel every day to whose stuff was better, whose stuff did Johnny use. That's not going to get the job done. So we both agreed on, like, that day, hey, there may be times where I give 70% or he does all of it or I do all of it or whatever. Let's look at the bigger picture. We'll just sign off on both of our names on everything that comes out of the typewriter or the computer or whatever. So, and the fax machine.
And the thing that I love about
fax
this,
machine.
The thing that I love
Godzilla,
about
Godzilla, fax machine, James Mason, Jerry Lewis.
Right. The thing that I loved about that is, in the way Johnny gets a better product out of that at the end of the day, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean he used us very well. We worked really well together. It was a war. He treated it as a war. When we were on the air, you could say anything you wanted to say to anybody else because it was all about ratings. It was all about beating ManCow, beating Eric and Kathy, whatever it took to be successful. And at times you had to develop a thick skin because it was work. It's hard work to be a number one in any demographic. I'm sure if you asked him today, it's very hard to look at I'm very disappointed. I'll probably get in trouble for this, but I'm very disappointed when I look at who people are listening to on radio.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like radio that's like a men do this, women do this. Isn't that funny? Let's take the glamour poll. And it's like, I want some entertainment. I want something that's fast moving. He's not a deep thinker, but it's all fun. And it's him having fun. And when he's truly, like anybody, when you're truly having fun and in that zone of having fun, everybody can feel it and sense it, and they want to have fun with you. And I don't think there's enough of that, in my opinion, in radio right now, what I'm hearing when I flip around.
Well, the thing that I love about the WGN Morning News, and for people who in the audience know WGN Morning News, but the people that are listening to this podcast, it's really like it's like morning radio in a way, because it's very casual and very funny and stuff like that. And it's also like Letterman in terms of, or Conan, because you're doing bits and it's everybody's having a good time on that show. How is that for you? Because you're not a journalist,
no.
And you're going in there. How does Jeff Hoover fit in there with writing sketches and bits and doing stuff like that?
That's a good question. I guess when I was on another. Okay, let me back up. Brandmeier in 2001 decides he's not going to sign his contract. So I'm out of work, and I'm like, what am I going to do? Who's going to? I got a couple of puppets, but whose hands are going to fit in my puppet? So, I talked to Kevin Matthews. I talked to Steve Dahl a little bit. But it just wasn't right. I don't think they were ready for it, and I wasn't necessarily wanting it. So I just sent resumes out. Tonight Show, Letterman, Rick Dees, Howard Stern, anybody. I said, who cares? I'm just going to try. And of all those resumes and all those tapes I sent out, I heard from Baba Booey, Gary
Delabate, the producer of Howard Stern.
Yeah, and it totally threw me off. He's like, we just listened to your tape. It's hilarious. How do you work? Jackie the Joke Man just left. How do you work? And I'm like, and I was so blown away, I should have said, I'll show you how I work. I'm going to get on a plane. I'll be there tomorrow. Instead, I was like, wow, I really didn't expect this. I don't know what. I'll have to talk to my wife. And how about if we do this? You know, the telethon's coming up. How about if we do a Jerry Lewis bit? And Howard, we'll see how. Well, I didn't have to do that, but I was so unsure of myself and doubted myself that I probably blew an opportunity. But we still did the bit, and it was up for an FME. If you know what that is, he has like a little It's like the Oscars, but for this show, and they call it the F Emmy Awards, and it was up for an F Emmy. But I had Gary's email, and so I wanted to, I was trying to prove to Gary, like, hey, I'm more than Jerry Lewis. If you give me a shot, you know, I come up with ideas, too, for, you know, because Brammeyer would have, like, if you have a guest on, part of my job, beyond just coming up with bits and coming up with characters, would be, what do you do with Gilbert Gottfried in the studio? What could we do with him? So we'd be coming up with ideas, crazy stunts, anything we could do. So I was trying to demonstrate to Gary, like, hey, I heard that you've got Bob Hope, or what, Bob Hope, I am ancient. I hear we have you have Simon Cowell or something on. I heard some ideas that you can do with Simon Cowell or whatever. And I wasn't getting emails back. And I'd call, and he wasn't calling back. And after about 1,000 phone calls, no, I didn't pursue it that hard. But I realized, you know what, I may be a threat to him. Maybe he's thinking, no, this guy can do some impressions, and he's kind of funny, and he's got ideas for guests. He's kind of like doing my job. I don't need another guy like that. So maybe I'm reading into it, but I think that's how I kind of screwed that up. So I'm unemployed. I'm at home. Watching Tracy is so supportive.
Your wife.
Take your time. Do something you want to do. I mean, I've got my job. Do what you got to do. What's going to make you happy. I'm here for you. And I thank her so much for that, because I really did try to, you know, I'd do call-ins to Eric and Kathy's show. And
yeah. So you're calling.
So I'm sitting at home making too much coffee, and I'm flipping around the dial, and I come across WGN Morning News. Mm-hmm. And they do this voicemail segment, and they put a phone number up there. Well, somebody like me, I like a phone.
Right. Hey, Potash, you got the prettiest goddamn eyes I've ever seen.
Whatever. I mean, I would just call and do bits, make up songs, and eventually I'm like, holy shit, I just left that yesterday, and they're using that call. Or I do wacky weenies, or make
now,
up songs.
Are you doing it thinking, like, I'm going to get a job out of this?
No, I was entertaining myself.
Okay. Much like what you do on Facebook today.
Kind of. And then Larry, one time on the air, said, who is this guy? This is stuff. Does he work here? Who is this guy? And I finally thought, after like a couple of months, I'm like, God, I'm an idiot. I should just. So I reached, I somehow got his email, I'm not sure how. And I emailed him and identified myself and a couple of the things that I knew that that he might remember and go, oh, yeah. And he's like, well, we're getting together for drinks for Robin's husband's birthday.
Robin Baumgarten, the co-anchor.
Could you make it? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, Tracy, let's go. So we go there, and there he is with his wife. And he didn't know what I looked like, so I went up to him like, hey, hi, Larry, I'm Jeff Hoover. And this is Tracy. And he's like, you're not as weird as I thought you'd look. And I said, thank you. And basically he's like, hey, I don't create job opportunities. Maybe I can get the news director to sit down with you. I know we all like what you do. And so basically he got my foot in the door. I got to meet with the news director, and I got some per diem work.
Like freelance.
Freelance basically. For like a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, it's like, okay, a couple hundred dollars here, a couple hundred dollars there. It wasn't doing it. You know, I needed a job. I needed benefits. And Tracy was carrying all the weight. So
did you feel bad about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you feel, you go home and like, how's Jeff doing? He's been out of work. What's this one? So there was a lot of that. I felt it. They totally supported me, but in my own mind, as you may have gotten by now, which
is
out of here.
Does the I'm going to be the most likely to succeed? Does that come up in the down periods?
Like, oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, now I feel like okay. I'm feeling good. Like I have a 30-year high school reunion. It's like I'm not going back there the cock of the walk. But I'm going. At least I'm going back there, not going, Mr. Ramirez, you're late on the Ebony Humpers 3.
Do you not?
I hope you really enjoyed it.
Do you not feel successful? I mean, I
no, I do, but I mean, I'd never take it for granted. I know that. Tomorrow I have a bit every Monday. They gave Larry in a sweeps meeting like a couple years ago said, or a year and a half ago said, hey, Jeff, you're going to hate me for saying this, but, you know, I've been telling you, you need to get on, you do these productions that take weeks to do, and you get props and editing with Terry Bates and all these, they're great, we love them, but we don't care if you're on the air for like 30 seconds doing whatever you want to do. So how about you do a segment on Mondays? We'll give you a segment to do whatever you want to do. So I know, like, every Monday, like tonight, I'll go to bed and I'll be thinking, oh God, I got tomorrow to deal with. I feel so much
pressure.
Do
you have something?
Yeah.
What do you got?
Tomorrow is circus day.
Okay.
So I found a clip. We've showed it before, but it's a kind of a blooper. I don't think it ever made it on the air.
Mm-hmm.
It's a woman in a polyester jumpsuit and a cowboy hat with sparkly cowboy hat, and she's got a couple of, like, shepherd dogs with a monkey strapped to it, and it's trying to herd goats. And PETA, oh, my God. PETA's going to be all up my grill tomorrow because it's
who's
long.
Pete? Who's
I mean, Pete? No, as far as I can tell.
Who's Pete?
PETA.
PETA, oh, PETA, the okay.
PETA!
PETA.
Oh, PETA. PETA, come here.
Right.
Me love you long time, PETA. No, so there, needless to say, the dog doesn't do what it was supposed to do, but I've taken it another step. The dog's name is Brandy, and in this minute and a half clip, she says Brandy like 31 times. So when I play it, I'm hoping some third shifters are watching. They can do like a drinking game. Now, because every time she says Brandy, you could do a shot. I mean, it's amazing.
Now,
that's just where my mind goes.
I want
all right?
to know this. Is the goal of the WGN Morning News to get people to drink more alcohol? Because I noticed there's a lot of your fans here today, and they all stopped at the bar before they came. And also on Facebook, it was all like, oh, we love Jeff Hoover. Is the bar? Is there a bar? Yeah. Is there a bar? Is there a
I
bar?
Know what brings them. I know all what right. brings the milkshake to the cage. What a milkshake to the yard? Or whatever that line is.
All right, we're going to improvise now.
Oh, we are?
Yes, we are.
I didn't get to tell you all the how I was abused and...
How were you abused?
Let me count the ways. No, are we leaving anything out? I feel bad.
Well, we're going to come
Can
back.
Can I tell you how funny my mom and dad are and
sure.
how much I love
yeah.
everyone that's here today?
Yeah. Your dad was a Marine.
Oh, I haven't done this in like 20 years.
Improvise.
And how I'm very self-conscious of failing in front of people. And
but can
how
I just
expect several standing ovations.
Right. Can I just say
and
this?
How David Koechner maybe turn off the podcast because he got so inside. I mean, a lot of you, God bless David Koechner, and I hope he hears this because I think he's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But I signed on to do this without knowing there was an improvised scene to end it. I thought, I was just uncomfortable doing an interview, let alone when I got back and then read up on Jimmy and the show, every show ends with an improvised scene with a guest. I'm like, mother, are you shitting me? So I do my research. I get on the YouTube, that YouTube thing mm-hmm. that the Koreans invented. And I watch a little bit of it. And he's sitting here like I am. And he's like, where do we get our characters? We can get our characters everywhere, anywhere, right? We can get them from a kitchen drawer. What do you see in a kitchen drawer? A knife. What are knives? Knives are sharp. Knives are shiny. I'm like, motherfuck! What am I doing? What am I doing? I have nothing to add to that. I have no, you know, you improvisers that are here or that are listening, I'm sorry. I just happen to think that maybe in some small way, you know that I'm a guy who failed. I am a guy who failed many, many times. And I will continue to fail. And I made no joke about it. I wanted this place packed today. Because if I'm going to fail, I want a full house. I want it to be the most disgusting, worst thing you've ever seen. Because I want to go down in flames. That's the only way to go. I mean, I want to die at work. Frazier Thomas died at WGN. I want to die at work. I love WGN Morning News so much. I hope that I die. This is water, by the way. I hope I die at work. I hope I'm wearing like a wink, halfway dressed as wink wink over my pants. Maybe dirty underpants. That would be great. So, Not too soon. Like, not tomorrow. I want to show this clip tomorrow. And then.
Okay, so are we ready to improvise?
Can I keep eating away at the clock here?
Yeah, we'll just do this improvising. Scene. Will
and
be
that's
shorter.
Clock, I said. Clock.
But the thing, the reason that I think we...
Did I tell you I sharted myself?
No.
At an Indian restaurant. I did. And I was so shocked that I sharted. It was just a trickle, but I mean, it wasn't a full-blown patty or anything.
Right.
But it was just a hot trickle. And I actually went out to... I was with Tracy. We were dating, I think.
You were on a date?
Well, their parents.
Were their parents?
And I was so shocked, I came out of the bathroom and I said... I just sharted. I actually told
to her
them,
parents.
I told her parents that I sharted.
And what did they say?
I think they kind of laughed. I don't remember. I think they kind of thought maybe I was kidding.
Did they
but I was
know?
Really self-conscious.
Tracy, are you here, right?
Yes.
What was your parent? What was your reaction to that?
That's why I married him.
Did you feel
love
like?
Love is a man.
All right, we're gonna. Is this stalling?
Is there another show at 6:30?
No, we got the theater till 9.
Oh, that's
so. We can go. So we're gonna improvise now.
Okay, can we do it very 101? Can we do it?
Yeah.
Improv for dummies.
Yes, we can do it improv for dummies. Okay. So what's your fear about this right now?
You know, I just don't like. You know, just like with Brandmeier, just like with WGN. You'd like to have it in, and you like to have it out. And I can't tell you how many times. I can't throw it.
But you told me this.
Sometimes when you tell them, hey, when I fall on the ground, go to commercial.
And the camera is just
and
sitting.
I look at the monitor, and I'm still laying down. And I'm laying down. And then I'm thinking, what else am I going to do? I know, I'll hump the ground. I'm humping the ground. Maybe they'll go to break. They're not going to fucking break. What am I doing now? So. Okay.
All right. So we're going to improvise now. So what we need is a suggestion.
Rainbows.
A relationship.
Brother-sister.
We're brother-sister, okay? Now, when you hear brother-sister, what goes on in your head? We're totally 101 here.
Who's playing the woman?
Okay, great.
And to play it honestly.
Okay.
Explain it too, because like, it's a small little, I mean, at one point you could go far with it and then may come across fey or something like that, and you want
right.
to be true to a female and not go, you know,
right, right. So you okay? So that's what's going on in your head. You don't want to play it stereotypical, right?
Are we supposed to do this? Like talk about it?
We can talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I just no. I'd like to play it for fun.
Okay,
I
mean, good.
I know a lot of improv get very serious. Like next thing you know, there's somebody crying on the stage. And they're talking about aborting a puppy. And, what the hell am I doing? So anyway,
okay. So
can I also work with improvisers like this? Yeah, I'll be back.
And then you're out there with the aborted fetus of a puppy.
Right.
I have a little teddy puppy who will take this thing from my hand. I have this poor little aborted fetus. Will you trade it for my life?
I know you're coming.
All right. All right. Let's go. So, what environment? Can we have an environment to location?
A classroom.
Brother and sister in a classroom. All right.
I'm really kind of nervous about this whole thing.
Yeah, I am too.
Well, what are you going to do about it? I don't know what I'm going to do about it.
Well, I came here because you got in trouble. I don't really want to be here, Sally.
Well, I was going to ask because I was expecting maybe Mom and Dad were going
to
come.
No, Mom and Dad are tired of coming to school, okay?
Oh, Big Brother. Big Brother goes, stab it, stab.
Sally, just be cool, all right?
Whatever, Brad.
Do you know, you could, please.
Brad does no bad. Brad's so okay. Not bad.
Okay, Sally. Bad. Sally, one more time and you're going to be expelled, okay? We, Mom and Dad, we keep moving from town to town because you can't keep lighting things on fire in the schools. Do you understand that?
I didn't light things on fire. It just caught fire on its own.
Oh, Sally.
I don't even look. I have nothing. Nothing. Brad.
Sally.
Brad, why don't you do something bad, Brad?
You know why?
I'm not. You never do anything bad.
I don't. Please, Sally. I don't do anything bad, okay? Mom and Dad have it hard enough at home.
You wet the bed.
I wet the.
You wet the bed.
So what?
Brad wets the bed!
All right, Sally. Sally.
Brad wets the bed!
Sally. I am the captain of the football team, okay? You can't tell people that.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
No.
Brad wets the bed!
Okay.
I won't. Do it anymore. Not that I did it. Did it on its own, but I won't do it anymore.
You know what, Sally? You don't take responsibility for anything you do. What happened? You were just possessed and you just yelled that out? And the fire just happened by itself?
I'm sorry.
You're sorry. Okay, good. Because
then you went to bed.
Stop! What are you going to say? Did I hit you?
You did. You hurt
I
me.
Didn't hit you,
you
Sally.
You hurt me.
Sally.
You hurt me.
Sally, I did not hit you.
You hurt
Sally,
me.
Sally, I didn't hit you. God, I don't believe you. You do anything for attention.
No, I don't.
Yes. What did you just do? You just made something up.
I didn't make anything up. You made it up. I didn't set anything on fire. And you hurt me.
Oh, Sally.
You suck as a football player.
Sally. I'm going to hit you, Sally. I'm going to hit you. Because Mom and Dad should have hit you a long time ago.
Boys don't hit girls.
You know, where did you read that? Because that's not true. Read the Second Testament, the New Testament.
You make me laugh. You make me laugh with all this Bible talk. I don't care about that. I don't even know how to go to Bible class. I hate Bible class. It sucks.
I'm not saying that.
God sucks.
Okay.
Jesus sucks.
We are in a prison.
Jesus sucks!
No.
Jesus sucks!
Do not say that.
You're hurting me!
Oh, Sally, for
you're
God's
hurting
sake!
Me.
For God's sakes! That is the fakest cry I've ever seen.
You have...
Yes, he is. You want a real cry, Sally? Do you want a real cry? Do you want a real cry? No. When that principal comes in, you are going to apologize just like you did a couple minutes ago.
Or...
I'm going to hit you so bad that you won't even remember your name.
You are so tough.
I am tough. I am the captain of the football team. And they will believe me over you. And you are the captain of the last place football team. I do sit on the bench every game. And you went to bed.
I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. You're going to a dark place.
You are going to a dark place.
That was so weird. I did not have a boner. I did not have a boner.
Boner talk. I do not find you attractive at all. You are my sister. That would be totally inappropriate.
You are a dark, dark person,
no.
Brad.
No.
Brad, you are bad. You are bad.
I am not attracted to you, Sally, at all. You are way too young for me, and we're brother
pitch
and sister.
Pitch in the tent. Brad, pitch in the tent.
I am not.
I'm a stepsister. It's not right. Me what's a bad.
I am not. It's a pencil. I have a pencil. It's a calculator pencil.
Sally, stop it. Stop it. This has gotten out of hand.
Yes, I'm labored breathing. And I don't have my asthma machine.
Where's your asthma machine?
It's in the asthma machine storage. It's in the locker area. Next to the ping pong.
Okay, we gotta just contain ourselves. Dr. Beckwith is gonna be in here in a couple minutes, okay?
Okay.
You look sweaty, and I have a boner. Okay? We gotta figure this out.
Oh my god.
Yeah, this is very uncomfortable for me.
Well, I'm dealing with some issues that are very uncomfortable for me right now.
Is that why you're sitting down?
Yes.
Well, I wish you'd get here because we need to address your situation. Maybe not so
you're
much
mine. You're not gonna say anything about my situation.
Oh. Niagara Falls.
What does that mean?
Step out.
I still don't understand. Okay, I'm just gonna hide.
I'm
here.
Not gonna scream out the window.
Please don't. Sally. Sally, please don't.
I could, I'm not gonna.
Okay.
Somebody sharted here.
Why do you have to do potty talk? You do anything for attention.
It looks like somebody sharted.
Okay,
right?
Sally. Okay. You're always trying to, like, get a reaction out of people.
Oh, are you saying I'm a temptress?
Yes.
14-year-old temptress?
Yeah.
I know about temptresses.
Why don't you just do what mom...
I know about temptresses.
Oh, tell me about them. You're walking like a temptress?
Yes. It's not doing anything for you, I guess.
Please, Sally, let's just forget this. Why don't you just do things that mom and dad ask you for? Why do you have to be such a troublemaker?
I'll try to be better, Brad, but I'm a little put off by what that was down there. That was not right. And we're in a Bible study classroom, and I'm in trouble for lighting things on fire.
Yeah, yes.
And you're acting out with your stuff. That's not right. I'm your stepsister. I didn't mean you can do those kinds of things.
I didn't.
And hit girls.
I didn't hit you.
And I'm... You did hit me. You hurt me down there, too. And that... Yeah. So, you're not so bad, Brad.
I'm not so bad?
Yeah, you're not so bad. I should be telling you what to do, and you should be following my wake. I know I'm younger than you, and you've seen it all and think you know everything, but I have things to say and things to do, too. Like, you know, I don't like to set things on fire to get attention.
So what are you doing?
Because I'm trying to... What people care about me. I got
things. I care about you. Mom and Dad care about you.
Whatever.
No, we do.
Are you just trying to...
No,
me
I'm not. I'm not trying to...
Yeah, you're just trying to...
I'm not trying
I don't
to...
trust
my
you.
Boner's gone down.
Good.
Okay?
Good.
I love you, okay? And I don't want to see anything happen.
I'm sorry. Boner!
I didn't have a boner.
No.
I was an acting boner.
You,
it was an acting
when you
boner.
Went
I'm
there,
to, yeah.
You went there. I kind of got in my head, and I thought,
the
wow.
The boner thing?
No, when I fell, and then you were got on me, and I'm like, okay. And then you made the choice of like the whole boner thing. I was
right.
Like, I needed the in my head like, oh, okay, why would he have a boner? Why are we talking about boners? We're talking about
no, no, we're talking about the we're scene that had boners in it. Yes, talking about boners.
I felt like I needed to establish I was a stepsister or something.
Yes.
And maybe that would help.
Why, you thought the subject matter was too...
If you're a stepsister and your brother wants to ask...
Did you think it was too dark, the subject matter?
Huh?
Did you think the subject matter was too dark?
It went dark.
Right.
And I've been known to do dark, but I was like thinking, oh boy. Now what do I do? So, I mean, I got in my head for a second, but I thought we kind of played it off well, and it kind of went somewhere from there. But I felt I got him a little in my head at that point, because I'm like, wow, it twisted to this darkness, and either I got to go further with it, like, yeah, you know, like it threw me back to when I did improv out of Second City, and you go to a bar, and Jimmy and I would be out there. All right, Jimmy and I need a location. Bathroom! Thank you. And we need a relationship. You're gay! And they'll be like, oh, great. And I mean, it kind of took me to that, like, all right, do you give them what they want, like some like full-on hardcore scene, or do you take the upper, you know, like this is the cleanest bathroom I've been into. I mean, mm-hmm. Take it somewhere where you're not giving that drunk son of a bitch what they wanted, you know what I mean?
Right.
Not saying you're a son of a bitch.
Right.
Not at all.
Well, I just thought, and I feel like shame about making the boner the choice, but I felt like it went, you know, like this, how could we keep heightening it? You accused me of hitting you, which you didn't. Right. Now, what is the highest stakes? Well, attraction between brothers and sisters, which happens. I mean, you know, I had sisters, you had sisters. And so...
Yes.
Yeah.
Sherry, if you're listening.
Right.
But then
all of a sudden now it really heightens the stakes. I didn't mean the way that I knew with your sister thing.
No.
I'll own it, my stuff.
No, I thought it was, you went dark and that was good. I mean, I needed, you were taking it somewhere and we could have kept going back and forth and milking that stuff for a long time and actually took it to another level. Okay, what do we discover now?
I actually thought it was very cool because I think at the last part of the scene, the character, she was so like vulnerable. I mean, we saw a different side of her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it was hard playing it wasn't like real method. Like, I felt like I was a girl. Mm-hmm. If anything, I probably felt like a young boy with some Jerry Lewis.
Right.
It's hard to get the Jerry Lewis out of you once you get that little...
Is that the foundation of everything you do,
no.
Jerry Lewis? Does it start with Jerry Lewis?
I don't think so, but it does pop up, and it's nothing you can do. Again, not about your boner. It does come up.
Okay, we're going to take some questions and answers from the audience. All right? So if we could turn the lights on. Great. Who's got a question for Jeff Hoover? Yes, right over here.
Who's Stan Diamond's real mother?
Now, who's Stan Diamond?
Stan Diamond is the illegitimate stepson of Neil Diamond.
Okay.
He claims to be, anyway.
Okay, and this is...
And he claims that his mom used to be a roadie for Neil Diamond, and she got passed around like a bag of chips.
Okay.
And he just likes to think that Neil Diamond was his seed was the one that created him. He's a really bad... wannabe kind of Neil Diamond impersonator. Mm-hmm.
And this is a character you do on the morning news.
Yeah.
And the question was, who's his real mother?
Yeah, I haven't really gone deep with that character. I haven't really done a whole background on him, but it's a good thing to think
about.
Great.
Another question right here.
Just wondering how much freedom you have at WGN. Do things get, you know, do you get hear no very often in terms of ideas?
Typically, we do things, and then you apologize later. I got in trouble, of all things. One time, we had John Tesh on.
From Entertainment Tonight, the long-haired guy.
Yeah, he does these jazz, or these big world music kind of concerts. And so I thought it would be fun to have Christopher Walken sing a Christmas song, and he'd do the accompaniment. So we didn't rehearse it. It was just like, do you know Santa Claus is coming to town? He's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, just play that, and then I got some lyrics on the teleprompter, but I was kind of ad-libbing as off the prompter. And at one point, I said something like, tickle that pickle, slap nuts, or something like that. Hey, how? You got to tickle that pickle, slap nuts, or something like that. And in the meeting, I remember getting reprimanded, like, you don't call our guests slap nuts. I'm like, I don't even know what slap nuts mean. I didn't mean like take his nuts and slap his nuts. It was just a nonsense word. Yet I was being like talked to, like this was a major infraction of courtesy towards guests.
Well, I know when I was at BZ, because you're not a journalist, and there's that like dance.
You'd like to say I'm not a journalist. Maybe I am a journalist.
But you.
I'm just kidding.
There's that like. I used to get so aggravated because when they would give me notes, they're coming from a journalist background. They don't have a comedy background. And so that always used to infuriate me. How do you deal with that?
I don't know. There's collaboration. I mean, and especially a lot of these things that incorporate the whole cast.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's a lot of collaborating. Like, you can come up with a concept if they like it. You hopefully get to do it the way you had in mind, but you also have to give opportunity for them to each individually mm-hmm. or as a group give their input. To make them comfortable.
So do you take the notes pretty well?
Like, I know something right now that we'll be working on soon, and it relies heavily on people that watch the show to know the joke, and it's not going to work because one day Robin had to read a vaginal rejuvenation story. And so there's like a callback to that day where she had to read a vaginal rejuvenation mm-hmm. thing. So I already know, like, when we go to shoot this thing, Robin's not going to... I'm not going to do that.
Right.
I'm not going to talk about vaginal rejuvenation. It was bad enough the first time. You know, so I know that we'll have to be open to creating something where she's comfortable
right.
with it. So, yeah, you have to be open-minded and hear other people's thoughts and ideas.
And has improv helped you with that? Like, the whole yes-and concept and, you know, like, let's bring in other people to do stuff.
Yeah, I mean, how else can I relate it? Chantel, Larry's cat. That's me. Okay, so I'm doing what any of you could be doing, which is meow over a phone. I mean,
so people don't know the bit.
But the trick is that Paul is the interpreter. Paul can understand Chantel.
Right.
And Paul does a great job ad-libbing. Another very natural mm-hmm. comic person. But I feed him some things too, like, hey, talk about the intern sleepover. Hey, you know, I'll bring up things that, so Paul will work it in the way that's comfortable for him, and it'll seem like it's all really right from his mind. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it is, but a lot of times we're helping each other. We're trying to give each other mm-hmm. tools to make something funny, to make it work.
Great. Let's take another question right here.
You mentioned a few times about people that are sort of naturally funny people. What are some things in your mind that make those people naturally funny? Like, is it just their speed?
Or it's just effortless. It's not like the... I'll give you a perfect example. That Godzilla thing, that was a thought that I had after seeing the movie. And it had no business being in this interview. But I think I brought it up just... I'd have to go back and listen to the interview. But I think I brought it up just because I felt like, hey, I want to interject this Godzilla thing. I think people would laugh at it or would maybe think it's funny. And it got a so-so response. And that was that was just something that I learned from that interview. Like, you know, don't come in with, be natural, mm-hmm. be comfortable. Try to find a way where you're just in your own place of being and don't overthink it and get in your head and think, I have to be funny. I have to have something prepared. And I felt that so much going in today that I wanted to succeed so much. I wanted people to enjoy themselves, the people that, you know, pay $10 to be here and support me and drive from the suburbs. Dean Richards, he's here. Dean, thank you for being here. I mean, how fantastic is that?
That's great.
All of you, I really am.
Are we going to make Dean's list? What would you give it right now? Dean, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but what would you give it right now?
Oh, boy. Humping the carpet, remember? I was.
Humping the carpet and several Chardon references.
Chardon?
Right.
On Dean's list A,
right
at the moment.
Whoa! Dean, I just want to say this. I love you, and I love all the stuff you do on WGN. You have a great voice, and the work I don't think you get acknowledged for is the voiceover on Victory Auto Records. When did you do that?
1991.
And it's this 1991. I love that. You don't get any money for that, do you?
I got paid whatever my daily rate was that day for doing it.
Oh my God! I always
better
think
than the guy, was it the car door falls off.
Yeah.
He's a tow truck driver because the water record didn't get anything.
Oh, my God. I love that. I love that commercial. Victory Auto Records.
It still works. I mean, they haven't had that and the... I love that old lady that throws a tile, the tire into the glass.
Uh-huh.
You can return your tire anytime. What is that? Have you seen that one?
No, is that... That's
discount tires. Yeah.
Right.
And it's you can tell it's old. It's like grainy.
I love
you
those.
You see people dying. If you watch really close, you see...
Well, Victory Auto Records, that 91, did you say it was shot?
My voiceover was 91. The video
was like...
From
right, there's like an 82-year-old Malibu in it, you know? You're just like, okay.
We had the guy on the show a couple of times, but he still has the watch. It was like one of those big leather, with a little small face on the watch, but a big leather wide band.
I think he's just stuck in the 80s, don't you? You know?
He should be in your season opener.
He's going to be, yeah. This thing, we got to wrap this up. This thing about you wanting to be more yourself.
Yeah, that goes back to the Monday thing. My first, and now for something completely Hoover, I put on a stupid hood. I had these thick glasses on, and I did a really stupid, it was around Halloween, I did like, you know, on a dark, dark night, there was a dark, dark house. And in that dark, dark house, there was a dark... dark room. In that dark, dark room, there was a dark, dark closet. In that dark, dark closet was Linda Kohlmeier.
And she came out. Now, that seems funny there when I did it. Larry was like, what the fuck did I do? He gave his own fucking spot for the... How are you going to get that 2 minutes back so I can show you a website you showed?
And Linda Kohlmeier is the
Linda Kohlmeier is the
lottery. Yeah.
I forget, we're trying to...
You know what Kohlmeier? You know, a rotto lady who put a balls for magic number.
Are there any Asians here?
Not anymore.
I need a hairless Asian man for my next trip.
Now, when you do something like that, what do you feel shame about that? Do you feel
no,
fear
because
about
you know
that?
What? I love Don Rickles, comedy influences. Don Rickles, Jerry Lewis, Jonathan Winters, Three Stooges, Abbott and Costello. Basically anything you saw on Channel 9 almost
right.
As a kid, the fat, lispy kid,
right.
3 inches from the boob tube, mm-hmm. You know, that was, you know, the Bowery Boys, remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, I am 900 years old.
Yeah, but I remember all of those.
But all these Judd Apatow comedies that come out now, I like some of them, but some to me, and here are me of all people talking about sharding.
Right.
But something about Mary with a sperm in the hair, big, funny, laughed, loved it. But it seemed like after that movie, all the young directors of comedies and the younger comedians, they all like, hey, what can we do to get that's better than Spoon in the Hair? You know, let's do something more risque than that, yeah. So it's like, I don't appreciate the newer comedies like that as much as I do going back watching It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, you know.
But you're almost like out of, even your comedy,
ancient,
your comedy is from a different era, don't you think?
I feel like Jerry Lewis now. The people of Bangladesh. I made them forget they were hungry.
But would you agree?
I could pull out my stool and get a laugh. No, but...
But wouldn't you agree that it's almost...
Yeah,
like,
it's a whole other generation.
We're like Red Skelton and...
Yeah,
and that's your kind of your sensibility, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I like... I mean, Jonathan Winters could go on Carson in a general's hat and come out as this fictitious general and do 20 minutes. And he didn't have he didn't have jokes.
Mm-hmm.
He just became this character and just went with it. And Johnny just ate it up and let him go. And sometimes you're watching it as a viewer and you're like going, where is he going with this thing? Mm-hmm. But it paid off every time. I like that kind of stuff. I like, you know, Tracy will tell you, I get a kick out of observing people. That's where you get characters from real people. And that's what going back to Brandmeier, that he always was like, hey, real is funny. Real is funny. You can have Robin Williams in the studio, but I'll take the old lady that collects potato chips shaped like animals. I'll take that lady any day. That to me is real people. I have fun with that, whereas it's, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. I just like real. I like real, and I don't like just being gross to be gross. I can be as gross as anybody in the world. But
I've read your Facebook.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Facebook and it's helped me be a better writer because I don't like things. After about 2 or 3 hours, 4 hours, I like to keep it going. And oftentimes it's juvenile or 100-pound scrotum jokes. Does anybody know the 100-pound scrotum guy? Don't you think like after you gained like 5 pounds on your scrotum, you go, I may want to go to a doctor. You know, at some point you go, the scrotum's looking a little big. I think maybe I ought to see somebody. Ah, what the hell? Oh, shit, it's 10 pounds. Fuck, I should probably see a doctor. But, let it go.
Well, then,
got a bug bite or something. Right. Holy crap, it's 100 pounds. I got arrested on a milk crate, and I got to put a hoodie on it. Right. And what? How do you go that far?
Again, and I don't want to pass judgment on a guy, but don't you think about like 20, you'd go out and buy a scale, you know?
I would think so.
So the thing that I, because we got to wrap this up, this has just been a blast. The thing that is so wonderful about you is that you took something, your improv experience, and you applied it to Brandmeier and then the morning news. And a lot of improvisers today, if they don't get Second City and they don't get on Saturday Night Live, they don't see beyond getting a job in advertising, producing, all this other stuff. What advice would you give somebody who was coming to Chicago or Los Angeles or New York starting an improv today?
That wanted to become a successful actor?
A successful whatever, or a producer, or whatever.
I get a benefit, like I said, out of failing.
But how did you get to that point?
You know what? It sucked. That was horrible. But Brandmeier used to always just say that was one, and Larry says it too. Sometimes I'll be like, oh man, I'm sorry. Because I don't know why I keep bringing up Larry. It's the whole show altogether. But for some reason, because he gave me this opportunity, he got my foot in the door. So I feel like and Brandmeier gave me my first shot. So I feel like when I work for Brandmeier, when I work for him, and when I work now, what I do, if I really fall or fail, I feel like, ah, damn it. But then if I saw Larry about it, or when I saw Johnny about it, they would just say, that's a puff of air. It's gone. Tomorrow's another day. And it's simple as that. Like, it's not the be-all, end-all. You, as much as I get up there, I'm on a home run every time. Let me tell you how bad I want it. But sometimes when you don't try so hard is when, I got a base hit. And it's like, I'll take the base hit, you know? Oh, I got hit, but I got a base. Okay, I'll take that. But sometimes you have to strike out, and maybe you have to strike out a couple of times before you get that home run
and how
you get
you,
on base.
And how have you used that failure to build your confidence? Because most people, when they fail...
I'm still working on it. You watch tomorrow at 8:20. You'll see a guy who's flop sweating and wanting to please the king and queen and the royal table up there. You know, I'm the jester. I'm the jester that's been invited for 2 minutes to come in and take over and entertain, hopefully, the viewers. But oftentimes you're worrying about the talent because they're the ones 15, 16 years together, that chemistry that they all have. They're the one that set the table. Now, you know, you got the court jester coming in there. And I want to make you all laugh now. And but I'm trying to be me. Who's me? I don't know. And it's like, oh, I don't have my neck brace on. I don't have a dress on. So being me in front of the camera and going back to Facebook, some of the stuff I put on Facebook are from my point of reference, my point of view, my observation, my thing. So I want to be more comfortable being that guy who I think can be funny on camera without all the props and the wigs and the mustaches. And if it fails, it fails. But, you know, not everything we do on that. I mean, we've made the best we've gone viral from fails. I mean, I did Talk Like a Pirate Day, and the prompter went out, and instead of like freaking out and running off the set, I freaked out on camera, but stayed in character, and it was probably funnier than the bit that I had written and worked on.
Well, I think that's what's great about that show. It's so improvisational, and I think the show has become funnier with your contributions.
Well, I can't say that that's
Dean,
true.
Can I ask
no.
What did you think of that?
You know what? Thank you, but that's not true. These guys are...
I understand, but they're becoming more loose because of your influence. Dean, what was your... Can I just get a lifeline here?
Dean's like, why did I come?
Yeah,
right.
Do you think there's some truth to that? That Jeff's influence on the morning news, it's, yeah, they become more looser and more playful?
He makes us all more comfortable. He almost gives us all permission to have fun and be crazy and relaxed.
Thank you. But it's really... thank you. I can't accept that.
Great. Dean, I'll accept it for Jeff.
No, thank you. We
accepting it for Jeff.
No, we have, they're all awesome people to work with. They come up with things on their own. They make stuff that I bring to them better. Like I said, it's collaboration. You know, nothing is like set in stone. You will do this. You will say this line. You will. And a lot of times, you know, I got to give Pat Tomasulo some credit.
He's a great stand-up.
I'll put this out there. When he first came on board, I helped him a little bit, but he didn't need my help. And I remember one time he was editing something, and Terry Bates is here, and I happened to stop by. He was editing it, and I said, "Wow, okay, hey, I got an idea. Hey, can you chop this and can you take this here? And hey, I'll give him this version just as an option," meaning the most, the best. I mean, his version was fine, but I was like giving him a shorter, what I felt was a shorter, tighter package.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't like it, obviously. I mean, he liked his. It was his idea, his vision. And I learned right away that Pat has ideas. And Pat is a one-man machine. He comes up with all the, I don't know if you saw all last week, he did these brilliant, he's making these voicemails, and this was the first time in however many years he's been there, 5 years, where he came to me and said, "Hey, will you be in this bit? We want to do this thing." And I felt so cool, because it was like, we've come a long way, because I kind of did my thing, he kind of did his thing, he didn't need my help, and now that he's like coming to me and like, "Hey, will you be in this thing?" It's like, wow, this could be the start of something cool, because I felt like I was able to contribute a little bit. It was still his vision, but you know, he was very open to like, "Hey, let's," I'd say, "Hey, how about this?" And, "Oh yeah, let's try it that way." And it was like, wow, this is really cool. So I don't know why I put up a wall early on when he first came there. Maybe I was threatened or something, like, "Oh, this new guy's pretty funny. Man, my shit stinks," you know, or I don't know what happened there, but I just kind of didn't want to, I kind of let him do his own thing and stayed out of his way after having, you know, I was trying to do good. Like, hey, your bit that was 3.5 minutes is now 2 minutes. Give that, give it a look at it. I think it's tight. And he was like, "No, I don't want that. Why'd you do that? I have this vision. What are you doing? I don't need that." So it's just, I don't know why I bring this up. Why am I bringing this up? Things were going well. Dean's list B minus now.
Jeff,
I just want to say we collaborate. We collaborate. Collaboration is great, and I feel very good that such talented people will come to me now and say, "Hey, will you be a part of this thing?" And I'm like, yeah, I'd love to. It's like being asked out, you know? Will you go out with me?
Jeff Hoover. Jeff Hoover, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And there you have it, another episode of Improv Nerd is in the can, episode 91. We are 9 away from 100. Will I make it? I don't know. After last week, it's in my life, I don't know if I'll make it. I want to thank my guest from the WGN's number one morning news here in Chicago, Jeff Hoover. I also want to thank Dean Richards for being such a good sport, and I want to thank our hosts, our home here in Chicago, Stage 773. And a big shout out to our new producer, and congratulate him on his second episode, Dan Schiffmacher. Thanks, Dan, for making me sound so slick and so professional. As you know, we're on feralaudio.com. And we're not there alone. It's a podcast collective. It is a smorgasbord. It is a buffet of podcasts. People like Chelsea Peretti, Todd Barry, Steve Agee, Matt Dwyer, Dan Harmon. The names go on and on and on. If you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning classes, The Artist Low Comedy, and my Improv Nerd blog, and you will become a better improviser. Sign up for our newsletter. Every week I will send you a blog about how to become a better improviser. All you have to do is go to jimmycorain.com and sign up. Follow us on Twitter, improv_nerd. Go to the Improv Nerd Facebook page and like us. It really helps with my low self-esteem. I want to thank my sponsor, the Hotel Lincoln here in Chicago. I want to thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. And he's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a
bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a rich...
I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat.
I help people.
She's a cat. We fight a penguin.
My